Streaming sponsored by the Madison Concourse Hotel.
Celebrate New Year's Eve at the Madison Concourse Hotel and Governor's Club. Enjoy live jazz, a surf and turf dinner, comedians, disco with BO5, classic country, a DJ dance party, and a ballroom brunch to start 2025 off right. Details at concoursehotel.com.
To a rebel offensive in less than 2 weeks, and the rebel forces are celebrating. A major issue is what happens next. The BBC's Frank Gardner picks up the story.
The rebels are primarily Sunni militants. They are Sunni Muslims, and Bashar's regime came from the Alawite sect. They are Shia, which is one of the reasons they were supported by Iran, whose government is Shia. So there is a risk that there will be vengeance, of bloodletting, of scores being settled. There's a risk that the country could disintegrate into competing areas. You've got the Kurds, the Sunni Muslims, the Shia Muslims. There are also Christians in Syria, and even a small Jewish minority. And already Al-Qaeda has been putting out a statement urging the rebels to now turn on what they call Jews and Crusaders, their word for Christians.
The concerns go beyond Syria itself. Here's reporter Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
Israeli military officials say they are carefully watching the situation in Syria, and they are concerned that the rebel forces that took over Syria are not committed to the ceasefire agreement between Syria and Israel dating back to 1974. Israel deployed forces in the buffer zone between the two countries, fearing that rebels could enter those areas. Israel says it is not involved in internal events in Syria.
In South Korea, prosecutors have named the country's president as a treason suspect following his declaration of martial law. Reporter Alex Jensen is in Seoul.
After the detention earlier in the day of South Korea's now ex-defense minister, who allegedly helped orchestrate last Tuesday's martial law move, President Yoon Suk-yeol is being investigated for power abuse and treason, against which his position offers no immunity even after surviving Saturday's parliamentary impeachment vote following a ruling party boycott.
In Paris, the formal reopening of the Notre Dame Cathedral, the centuries-old landmark, suffered extensive fire damage 5.5 years ago. Well, they were expected to fetch much less, but some famous slippers have sold for a whole lot more.
A pair of iconic ruby slippers that were worn by Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz, and then stolen from a museum nearly two decades ago, fetched $28 million with Heritage Auctions.
Doing $28 million. The ruby slippers just sold.
And with the buyer's premium, a commission that the buyer pays, the slippers sold for a total of $32.5 million.
That's CBS's Matt Piper. By the way, those ruby red slippers were expected to sell for a mere $3 million. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Wisconsinites who are HIV positive are worried about the future of their treatment with the incoming presidential administration. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
In Wisconsin, about 7,400 people are HIV positive. The number of newly diagnosed cases hit a decade-long high in recent years. About 94% were linked to care services within 3 months of diagnosis, according to the Wisconsin Department of Human Services. Boston University social scientist Anthony Petro cites progress in the medical treatment of HIV/AIDS. He says some diseases take on a set of political and moral meanings that can affect societal and even scientific views.
When you think about public health itself, it is the application of medicine to a public, and that depends upon us knowing who the public is that we care about.
President-elect Donald Trump has picked Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to lead the Department of Health and Human Services. Petro points out that RFK Jr. has expressed suspicion that HIV causes AIDS and has suggested instead that recreational drugs called poppers could be to blame. The medical community says that's false.
Here's someone today in 2024 thinking about those kind of conspiracy theory approaches to thinking about HIV and AIDS is certainly troubling, but it's not new. And I think we do have a very good infrastructure for HIV/AIDS care.
He wants to remind folks about pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, the antiretroviral medication to prevent HIV. Most private insurance and Medicaid programs are required to cover PrEP services without copays or deductibles. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny skies for today as a south wind develops 5 to 10 miles per hour, highs in the mid-40s. Clouds roll in tonight, showers developing after midnight. South winds will continue, and low temperatures in the lower 40s.
Currently 35 degrees.
Earl Ingram.
Join me on the next show. It's Motown Monday. We'll catch up on the news from the weekend and talk about the politricksters of the day.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10. Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, hitting cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. Hey, Cudahy, Weed, all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Well, this is day 19 of Native American Heritage Month, and how you holding up there, Haley?
I'm holding up pretty dang good. How about you, Daga?
Doing good. Still have a little cold, you know, still trying to make things happen here. I had a reprieve, and then I had a fallback, and this is something that's going around, I've heard, too, that this little teeny nagging little cold I have.
I know. It always kind of seems to hit people before the holidays and then kind of after the holidays. So it's important to kind of get better and before you spend some time with your relatives coming up.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of hit better, we got our friend Ruth Buffalo, Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. And I think she was throwing an axe earlier this week. I'm not sure. Welcome, Ruth.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Right on. Hey, were you able to go down to Flannel Jack's and throw the axe?
Yes, we were. We went Sunday and it was fun. So we have one more Sunday for fundraising. They had selected MIWRC. Flannel Jack's had selected MIWRC as a nonprofit they wanted to help raise funds for in the month of November on Sundays. So 25% of the funds raised or the proceeds that are generated at their business on Sundays, 25% of it goes to MIWRC.
That's awesome. What a great opportunity and to get the word out too with such a great organization. Hey, you were out of town last week and for work. Can you tell us what listeners a little bit what you guys were doing out of town?
Sure. Yep. We were with the Birth Justice Collaborative. It's a Black and Indigenous women's collaborative focused on birth justice. There's a group up north, North Minneapolis, African-American women and Black, and then down here in the south side is Natives Indigenous. And so we're working, we're one of the three partners along with the IW and NAC who are working towards getting an American Indian birth center here in Minneapolis.
Wow, that's exciting. And I know Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center used to be really involved in that years ago. So that's great that you guys are doing that again.
Yeah, we're super thankful. It's beautiful, beautiful work. It's, you know, I'm a part of, I think like everybody, we have like heavy work that we're a part of. So it's really nice to be a part of something light for once, you know, with birth. And all of us have, unfortunately, some common denominators with the group I'm with, is that we haven't had pleasant birthing experiences, you know, even for our firstborns, you know. And so that was kind of one of the commonalities that the Native women in my Master of Public Health cohort shared, was just having bad experiences when it should have been like a beautiful, you know, what is a sacred time. And so based off of for a number of reasons, we were treated poorly.
Wow. 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 That's a heavy statement. I know a friend of mine had a really rough first pregnancy too, and we're godparents of her children. And so that's great to have you guys and other organizations out there speak out on that.
Yes, for sure. I think it's just everybody's responsibility to help where they can, be good to one another, help each other live good, healthy lives. Don't be bullies. Don't be cyber bullies. Don't contribute to harming one another. You know, it's just how can we be good relatives to one another?
Yeah, definitely. I know you only have time for a quick segment today. I want to always get how people can find out more about your organization and how they can support you. So before, you know, I have a good memory, but it's short. So before I forget, I got to please ask you to remind our listeners out there.
Sure. MIWRC.org. That website will link you to all of our socials. We have a big event tomorrow. It's our groundbreaking for the housing renovation project of the top two floors. We have tenant housing, and it's a good model, I think, that others are replicating, which is good, you know. So it's top two floors of MIWRC will be moving from 14 2-3 bedroom family units to 24 single units, supportive housing, emergency housing for our unsheltered relatives, and then also having access to the supportive services, direct services that we provide here on the bottom two floors.
That's amazing, going 14 to 24. That is totally amazing. And again, your organization, Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities here, is a beacon of hope to a lot of people. So I just always have to say a big peeny gigi to you, Ruth, for stepping up and leading this organization in a good way.
Well, it's a good odds, yep, but it's so important that we continue to be good to one another, be good relatives, don't harm one another, whether it's on online. I think people have such courage online, but in person, you know, it's quite cowardly. So I think we should really be good relatives to one another. That's the bottom line that I hope we get across moving forward, and period. Elected officials or not, please be nice to one another. Please be good to one another, because everybody's humans. Everybody has families, children, you know, just be nice. Be nice.
Yeah, I agree. And thank goodness in my job, I haven't been attacked that much. But it's a thing. And I'm glad you bring it up, because this, you know, overt stuff does happen. And we all got to really just be, like you said, nice to each other. And especially these times, I mean, all times for sure, but these times too, we need to really unite in a good way.
For sure. And I think, you know, contributing to poor behavior doesn't do any one of us favors, you know, and so I think we all have a responsibility to address this bad, poor, harmful behavior as well. Being silent basically is saying you condone these poor behaviors. And so hopefully, you know, we continue to move forward in a good way and treat one another with respect and set a good example for future generations, truly. And just realize that, you know, we're all human, we're all pitiful human beings here mm-hmm. for a purpose. And, you know, like, we all come from different backgrounds. You know, my mom, you know, she grew up without running water, you know, so that definitely shapes my worldview in being more understanding and finding ways to just be good to one another.
Yeah, I mean, really good point. We don't know what people are going through, and so to be judgy and judgmental is not a good thing. And I appreciate you bringing this up because it's just a really, really good reminder of how to be good relatives.
It is, and it's top of mind because I was visiting with other Native women professionals here in the Twin Cities area, and they're sharing what they're going through, and it's just unacceptable to hear of how poorly, badly, you know, Native women are being treated and targeted online. You know, cyberbullying is just unacceptable, big or small. And so it's just, when does it stop and how do we hold these individuals accountable? I mean, when I was in office, I was attacked, my children were threatened, you know, to be stolen. And people, you know, to this day try to cause harm online. And so it's the real issue, and we shouldn't condone this poor behavior, big or small, bullying online.
Right, right on. And I appreciate you bringing this up. And Ruth, I always appreciate you stopping in and speaking your truth. It means a lot to us here on Native Roots Radio, and especially Haley and I.
Matsugadats. See you.
We'll see you. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back after this short break.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
Hey there. It's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Today, I'm talking about why, if you've got savings, you need a high-yield savings account. High yield just means high interest, you know, the money the bank pays you for keeping your money with them. You will probably find the highest yield savings accounts at an online bank. Just go on and Google and do some research and figure out who's offering the highest rates right now. Now, lately, it's been between 4 and 5%. That is your savings earning real interest. And okay, figuring out all the details of opening a new bank account can be very annoying, but I bet you can probably get one going in less than an hour. So give yourself 60 minutes and get it done. I've done it. You'll thank yourself when you see your money making money for doing nothing. For more everyday money help, check out my videos at Work Money Media on YouTube. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American and Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Yes, we really appreciate their support, and what a great organization they are. Hey, we have our special guest today, and I really do mean that today, special guest. We have Shannon Housley, who's a president at a Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican Indians, and Kate Nelson, an award-winning independent journalist. And really good to see you again, President. Long time no see.
It has. And congratulations on those new beautiful grandbabies, Robert.
Oh, really appreciate it. We get to watch them every Wednesday and Thursday. So
you and Wendy have to be thrilled by that, huh?
Oh, definitely. You know, a little apprehensive at first, because, and then you just can't stop but love them.
That's right.
You just can't wait to see them, and every week is different, and it's amazing. But enough about me. You guys have a big event coming up here, Uplifting Native Voices, here in Minneapolis, and in one of my favorite buildings.
Yeah,
We do. We have the What She Said panel coming up. It's part of a global speaker series hosted in the Fouché Tower, you know, one of the most iconic buildings in downtown Minneapolis. And in honor of Native American Heritage Month, the focus is on uplifting Native voices. And, you know, what's more Indigenous than than speaking with a panel of strong matriarchs here in the Twin Cities.
Absolutely. And I love the Fouché Tower. And welcome, Kate. I didn't see you there. You don't have your camera on, so I didn't see it. So welcome to Native Roots Radio.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, this is awesome. Let's talk a little bit more about this. It's a series of conversations. Kate, do you want to take it from there, and then I'll get back to the president?
Sure. You know, like I mentioned, it really is going to be a free-flowing discussion. I mean, you know, we could probably go on for hours, but it'll be a free-flowing discussion. Doors open at 5. The speaker panel starts at 6:30. It should be a really delightful, robust conversation, but also an honest conversation about some of the issues that our tribal communities face. And, you know, I think some of the topics that are front of mind for us. And in addition to that, there's also going to be a marketplace of Indigenous owned businesses that are, you know, offering all of their handmade goods. So it should be a wonderful evening.
Yeah, that's awesome. And President Housley, one of the things we always like to talk about is how, you know, our allies too that come to these things. If these things are for sale, they're for everybody. So don't be afraid, but to purchase these.
Absolutely, supporting Indigenous people is also engaging in this evolution of what we've seen, Robert, where there has been with Indigenous community entrepreneurship since time immemorial, you know, from the original contact, you know, but we're seeing an evolution of, you know, our artists really finding a way to support themselves and do something that they're so passionate about. But as you know, Robert, it tells our story in a different way. It is not just to be enjoyed, but there is collectively a story behind everything that is made by Indigenous artists. And there's a story to be told and a story to be shared. And it's a beautiful thing. And sometimes as we navigate, to your point, allies, sometimes that's the safest place to start because it invokes the conversation. It invokes, you know, what that piece is telling us. And it comes from the lens of the artist and their lived experience. So it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it really is. Kate, we got Shelley Buck and Sharon Day and yourself and Shannon, President Shannon Housley. That sounds like a great panel.
Well, in building on, you know, what Shannon mentioned, it really is about, I think, breaking down some of those stereotypes that are just so commonly held about our tribal communities, you know, that our experiences and our cultures are a monolith. And I think you're going to find that, you know, even in the discussion, that we're all bringing our own lived experiences to that conversation. And, you know, you bring 5 strong Indigenous outspoken women into a room, and we're not necessarily all going to have the exact same perspective on topics, which I think is the beautiful thing about, you know, what we're seeing and having Indigenous voices amplified, is that it's showcasing again just that range of our identities, our perspectives, our approaches.
Well, that's a really good point, Kate, that, you know, there are 570 recognized tribes, and we all don't do the same thing the same way, but we're pretty similar, but not really.
Exactly. You know, there are definitely shared values. What I like to say is, you know, if anyone approaches me and says, well, you guys must all know each other. And I say, no, we don't. But the funny thing is there aren't that many degrees of separation, especially, you know, in a place like the Twin Cities, where we have such a, you know, really thriving, tight-knit Native community. But it is that idea that, again, you know, we're celebrating our similarities and our shared values, but we're also celebrating how we're unique.
Yeah, absolutely. And Shannon, you know, it starts at 5 and then it goes to 6:30. And I like it. It's a mix and mingle, you know, and hanging out. And again, the Fauché is an awesome building. And it was made by the same person that made or designed the Empire State Building in New York.
Love it. Love the idea of the architecture to tell our story, right, Robert? But it's one of those things, you know, where, like Kate talked about, it's an opportunity to reengage. You know, I mean, we all have foundational perspective, and we all have threads that enjoin us in different ways. But we also celebrate our uniqueness and diversity, and it's just another way to amplify that. You know, coincidentally, I'm sitting in my hotel room. I'm in Pewaukee at Santa Fe. I'm at the Violence Against Women's consultation. So we have our annual consultation for violence against women. And so it's an interesting time, you know, where we're talking about celebrating women, but we're also here talking about how do we protect our women and our Indigenous relatives, right? And from not just the lens of just, you know, from a sovereign lens of that of, okay, so as nations that self-govern, what does safety look like in our community? What are the unique challenges that we all face to protect our, you know, relatives? And then certainly we're not, as everybody on this call knows, but for your audience, tribal nations are not just race-based, we're politically based. So we have a unique relationship with the federal government for the treaties that we entered into for the dispossession of so many things we lost. But what I will say resoundedly is the one thing we didn't lose in all of that was our spirit and our preservation. You know, we persevere absent any of the challenges that we have, you know, since I always say we've been dealing with challenges for 500 years. And, you know, as you see the climate and the environment change, so does the adaptability and the capabilities of Indigenous communities. And I truly believe Indigenous people, especially Indigenous women, have a lot to teach the world about, you know, our strength, our resilience, and how we navigate the world, because they represent the backbone and lifeblood of our tribal communities. They bring, I mean, they have the most superpower, right? They bring life to the world. Does it get it any better than that?
Well, I agree 100%. And, you know, we're led by our Native women. And I'm glad you brought that up. Kate, we're going to take a quick break here. We're with Kate Nelson, award-winning independent journalist, Alaskan Native, and also President Shannon Housley, president at Stock Bridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians. And it's really good to see you again. I think the last time I saw you I was wandering around in Washington.
I think we were at a we were actually at a rally, Robert, for the Hallin versus Brackeen case with the Indian child welfare case. It was being heard at the Supreme Court level.
Yeah, definitely. And it's always good to see people like yourself out there supporting all these causes. And I know you're a doer, and it's great to hear from you, Kate, too. We're going to have another segment here and talk a little deeper and about these issues. And Kate, I just really appreciate meeting you for the first time here on Native Roots Radio. And our audience is really lucky to hear from two strong women, along with our producer, Haley, making it three strong women. So I'm always outnumbered in a good way. Oh, all right. Well, we're going to take a quick short break here. What do we got? About a minute? So,
yeah.
All right. Well, Haley, this is awesome. We have two strong women, and we're talking about a lot of good things that we love to talk about here on Native Roots Radio.
Yeah, please stay with us.
We'll be right back.
A new choice, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation, 540 WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. Rebel forces have toppled the Syrian government. The BBC's Barbara Pladusher reports.
There's a crowd of Syrians living in Lebanon who are now heading back into Syria. We don't really know what the situation is on the other side of the border. We understand that Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the Islamist rebel group that is leading this offensive, has said it is taking control of the border crossings, but we don't know where that is in the process and what the Syrians here will find when they get to that side.
Now the rebel leader has some decisions to make.
Gaddafi Mohammed Jalani is smart, as he appears to be. He has turned his back on al-Qaeda and the extreme Islamist jihadists, and that is his best way to rid his organization of that terrorist label, because they are a prescribed terrorist organization by the UN and several governments. It's the best way for Syria to get back up on its feet.
The BBC's Frank Gardner, CBS News Special Report.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Bucks topped the Wizards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the Wizards 124-114. Despite now losing 14 games in a row, Washington kept the game close. Bucks head coach Doc Rivers.
Mike, I didn't think we played a great game today. Some of these games are hard sometimes just because you got a team that's just loose. They're just playing. Like, we just kind of came out and played, and then we kind of got into the game. But you take wins like this because these are the games early in the season we would have lost.
The Bucks improved to 10-9. Men's college basketball, number 15th ranked Wisconsin, remains undefeated after beating Chicago State at the Kohl Center 74-53. John Tanjay led with 22 points. The Badgers kick off their Big Ten schedule Tuesday at home against the Wolverines.
We know now we jump back into deep water Tuesday night with league play opening up, and got a really good Michigan team coming in here, so we'll use Sunday and Monday to prep for that and get ready to jump into Big Ten play.
That's Wisconsin basketball head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny skies for today as a south wind develops, 5 to 10 miles per hour, highs in the mid-40s. Clouds roll in tonight, showers developing after midnight. South winds will continue, and low temperatures in the lower 40s. Currently 35 degrees.
Earl Ingram.
Mr. Ben Wickler, he is running for the national DNC chair. The fundamental problem was the Democratic brand. Do you think that is the case more than the Harris campaign?
Core answer is yes. The Democratic brand, it's not what we necessarily do or say. It's what people have heard and internalized. And that, to me, is an argument for thinking about how and where we communicate, making sure we are present in places where people are thinking about stuff other than politics.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Cash Patel, who Trump has nominated to be the head of the FBI, saying he wants to basically shut down the main parts of the FBI. Bill Barr, MAGA Republican Attorney General to Donald Trump. Quote, the very idea of moving Patel into a role like this showed a shocking detachment from reality. Unquote. This is not the left calling out Patel. This is the right.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots.
Woot, woot.
And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, he is featured in an article in the Cap Times, and he's the host of Nightlight. Across Civic Media, Pete Schwabba will be joining us. And of course, this shouldn't be a thing. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents, I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, they do. Hey, we are here with President Shannon Housley of Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican Indians and Kate Nelson, award-winning independent journalist, Alaskan Native. Really good to have this talk. We're talking about the event coming up, What She Said, Uplifting Native Voices, and that's this Thursday, November 21st at the Poche in downtown Minneapolis. Just look up. I know there's a lot of tall buildings, but until 1973, that was the tallest building in downtown Minneapolis, believe it or not.
I haven't been in there, but yeah, I heard it's going to be the event to go to.
Right on. So welcome. And President Housley, I want to ask you a quick question. You know, talk a little bit about your background and how you got to this point in your work. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. So, Robert, I'm going on 20 years in tribal government, 10 as the president. So that seems like a significant amount of time, but in tribal politics, it absolutely is. But I feel like I've always been civically engaged, but it was just a matter of, you know, we all find ways to serve our communities. And, you know, especially I feel like, especially for women in my nation, we have been historically underrepresented. I serve as the fourth tribal president, but no tribal president as the first, number four as a woman tribal president. But I'm the only one that has made it past one term. So, you know, so the fact that I'm going, you know, on my fifth term is pretty remarkable. Like anything, we are all engaged in our tribal communities in some capacity. And I'm not title based. I say everybody is a leader in their own right. Everybody has a unique gift to bring their tribal nations or their tribal communities wherever that they are. And so for me, it was, you know, I wanted to, what my goal was to really bring a traditional perspective seated in our culture, language, and tradition, but give a 21st perspective of how we were going to navigate a system or an environment that wasn't necessarily designed for us. I always tease people. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm dual language. And they're like, oh, you speak your tribal language? I said, no, I speak English and I speak the oppressor's language. I said, because that's really we're navigating systems that weren't designed for us or with us, you know, historically. So I saw, you know, the challenges that we faced in our tribal community. And I felt like I had, you know, serving on the board of directors for over 10 years, I felt it was time for me to, I had gotten my education and I had done different things, but it was time for me to step up or step out. I felt like, you know, I really needed to bring my nation around things and help organize, you know. And interestingly enough, you know, I never thought in my lifetime, in my career, that we would be able to manage, you know, a pandemic, a global pandemic, and manage different things. You know, I'm a child, a descendant of all four of my grandparents and grandparents are byproducts of the boarding school experience. They all attended. And so, you know, and they have been through multiple challenges, including all of my grandparents were born before a time that they were even recognized as U.S. citizens. So it was a very challenging time, you know, but yet I through their resiliency and their quiet navigation, I took great strength in that. And I felt like I owed it to them. I felt like I owed it to myself to put myself out there and be vulnerable and say, if men historically in our tribal nation can do this, then so can women, for the simple reasons that I expressed earlier. You know, women are represent the backbone and lifeblood of tribal communities or communities in general. And so I felt like we needed to bring a different perspective, you know, where we, you know, were able to present ourselves in our truest sense be vulnerable, admit we didn't have all the answers, but try to build community and consensus around that and build a healthy community. And so that was my primary goal and drive. I never aspired to be a tribal leader. I was literally, before I even ran for council, I was at a social justice event with Ada Deer, our dear friend Ada Deer, a former tribal leader, well-known in Indian country, who helped her tribe regain their federal recognition after being terminated. She's run for political office. She's just an amazing woman. And so we were talking and she was asking me, and so she's like, so what are you going to do? And I'm like, well, I don't understand what you're saying. She's like, well, you know what? It's time to put up or shut up. You know, it's time for you to get engaged. People, women need to hold spaces and positions and help navigate. And I'm living proof that it's possible. So, you know, I took great strength from that, but I felt very supported too. You know, it takes a village when it comes to these types of things, and it takes women to support other women in any capacity. You know, that's when you have healthy, thriving communities. And, you know, there is so much lateral violence that takes place in communities all over this universe, but especially you find that in tribal communities, especially with Native women. And, you know, and I was just like, I need to example what healthy relationships among women looks like, and I need to be able to demonstrate that by my actions.
Wow. Well, well spoken. And while we really miss her too, she just passed on just recently. Kate, what brought you to this point of your career and your life? What brought you to where you're
at? You know, I, despite being Tlingit, I grew up in northwestern Minnesota pre-internet. You know, there are probably some people who have never experienced that, but magazines were how I connected to the greater world outside of my small farming communities. So I always knew that that's what I wanted to be doing. You know, came down to the University of Minnesota, studied journalism, started working in magazines, specifically lifestyle topics. So culture, art, food, travel, style, you know, all of these topics that I think everyone can really access. And I was, until very recently, the editor-in-chief of a local magazine called Artful Living. And, you know, it was really in 2020, after George Floyd was killed, that I think so many of us reflected upon, are we doing greater good? Are we, you know, contributing to greater good with our time and our talents? And so how I got to covering Indigenous topics for, you know, national, international media outlets started innocently enough. I wrote one story about Chef Sean Sherman opening up the Wamni, and that really made it clear to me, you know, what a need there was for our stories to be told at this national level on these big platforms, and really to be accessible for non-Native audiences, which I think, you know, our non-Native allies play such an important role in uplifting Indigenous voices, in uplifting tribal sovereignty. And, you know, since then it just really blossomed organically. And now I'm focused on that exclusively. And again, it's still those same topics: art, culture, food, style. And I think, again, those are accessible ways for anyone, but specifically non-Native audiences, to learn more about tribal communities. And it's a way for, you know, you might, like Shannon was saying earlier, you might really admire, let's say, someone's style, or you might think that someone's food is really delicious. And I think that that's a way to start a conversation. So that's really, you know, what I'm trying to do with my work. And I hope that journalism, unfortunately, still just has such gatekeeping, you know, in terms of what needs to be in place for people to be successful. So typically includes that four-year college education. It's about who you know. And, you know, there are so many marginalized talents who might not have access to those things. So I really hope that I'm not only, you know, bringing voice to our stories, but helping break down some of those barriers, so that, you know, by the time that I'm retiring, I hope that there are dozens of Native journalists who are telling our stories at these levels.
Well, Kate, I hate to tell you, but our work, we never retire.
I know.
Right, President, right, President Housley?
No, they don't let you retire.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. And I'll tell you, Kate, too, how important your work is, because there are so many people out there that want to support native businesses, native stories, native restaurants, and do it in the right way. So that's really important to the larger community, not only are us natives, but you know, we're still here, and we go through that conversation all the time. And you know, just to blow our own horn, you know, we're on 30 stations now and have over 200,000 listeners, and woo-hoo! People I run into. Yeah, long, a little incredible. Different when you were first on the show, huh, President Housley?
It's still just as important today.
Yeah, and you know, and it is important that we run into the community, that how many people do listen, and how many of our white allies out there really appreciate your truth and President Housley's truth.
Well, and I think the more of us who can be doing this work with, again, whatever it is that, you know, we have been blessed with in terms of our talents, and just helping really shout our stories, shout our perspectives from the rooftops. There will never be too many of us in this work.
I agree, Kate. And I think just to your point, that medium, right? It's to create, not only to celebrate our diversity and the unique gifts that we all possess, but also it's to create allyship and educate people about the significant contributions we've had to this country since time immemorial. And so, to your point, it invokes conversation. It invokes a safe place for people to ask those questions, and it helps build understanding, right? And it actually creates a level of visibility for young people who often feel invisible. They feel unheard, unseen, and invisible in the larger landscape of the country we live in, even the world we live in. So that is another way to celebrate that in a medium. That's multi-layered, multifaceted, and it also allows us to control our narrative, because, you know, many things have been written about us, but it's his story, right? So we have to make sure that we engage in the message and how we want it to be presented. And it takes people like Kate and others, Kate and Haley and Wendy and others, and even you, Robert, to get those platforms and mediums out there so people have a way of reaching out to us and within us, and to better understand or conceptualize who we really are as Indigenous people.
Yeah, well, I could talk to you people for hours here. This has been great, but I just want to let everyone know it's an event called What She Said, Uplifting Native Voices, starting at 5:00, where there was a mix and mingle, and then a panel discussion at 6:30, and then cocktails and connections. And I want to give a quick shout out to Melissa Olson, award-winning reporter at NPR, who's been on the show many times, that she'll be leading the way there. I want to just say a big peeny geegee, Kate, for coming on. Great to see you again, President Shannon Housley.
Always, Robert. Thank you, Robert and Haley, for having us. We look forward to it.
Right, yes, on. The pleasure is all ours, and hope to see you on Thursday.
Yes.
Hey, all right. I'll be there. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee, 540 WAUK.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. As Democrats pick up the pieces from their loss to Donald Trump, one of the first major decisions the party will be making is to select the new chair of the Democratic National Committee. The race for that role now has a major Wisconsin connection. Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, is now officially running for DNC chair. One Democratic source I talked to characterized Wickler as a Goldilocks candidate for the role. He's liked by both centrists and progressives, big-dollar donors and grassroots organizers, and knows how important state parties around the country can be in a second Trump term. So, could he be just right for the role? The vote for DNC chair is scheduled for February 1st. A lot can happen between now and then. But whether or not Wickler wins in his bid for the role, it will certainly be a story to watch for Democratic politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl! That was a good howl. Hey, that's going to be an awesome event. What She Said, Uplifting Native Voices, this Thursday, November 21st, in West Minneapolis on the Fauché Tower. And that's just, that's an awesome building. And, you know, the way it's constructed, too, each floor is like 2 inches, or I want to say 2 or 3 inches smaller than the next floor.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's really a tribute. Wendy and I had our anniversary there 1 year.
Oh, wow. Cool.
It was weird, too, because I don't know, there was a collapse of a building or something in Florida, and I was afraid of heights all of a sudden. I haven't been since, but it was weird. It was just too close, I guess. I don't know. But
does it have a balcony? Can you go outside?
No, but you can go on the roof.
Oh, you can.
Yeah, okay. It is like the Empire State Building in New York. It's crazy. I mean,
have you been to the top of that?
Of the Empire State Building?
Yeah,
a couple times.
Yeah, and good thing they have those fences that are like double the height of you.
Yeah, and I was years ago. I was at the World Trade Center too.
I remember that.
Mind blowing.
Yeah.
To think of, I haven't been to the new one, and that one's huge in New York.
Yeah.
Maybe soon. Wow, it's great, and anyone can go there. And I guess, too, I want to mention just a little bit, too, that it's very inexpensive to go there, and then they give you a percentage off on your parking, I believe.
Yeah, I think reading here, valet parking available at a $10 discounted rate. And I think if you go online, I think tickets might have been $20.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. And
for sure.
I'm going to try and make it. I won't be able to make it until after the show, but it would be definitely worth going there and checking it out. And, you know, Melissa Olson is, again, with NPR now. And she I met her years ago. She did a documentary on her mother, an audio documentary. Of her mother being adopted and visiting places that she grew up in, and mother since has passed away, but it was a great, great documentary, and I reached out to her after I heard it and had to get her on the show.
Yeah, of course. You said NPR, which kind of just got me thinking. Leah Lem, she kind of runs the Native News Initiative with NPR.
Yeah.
And she has a new, like a special screening of her documentary film, Finding Manuman, A Search for the Spirit of Wild Rice. And this screening is actually tomorrow in St. Paul. It's at 1 p.m. and it'll be at the Kling Public Media Center's UBS Forum in St. Paul. And yeah, that'll be fun. Congratulations, Leah, on that documentary. Can't wait to watch it. The Journey of Wild Rice, Finding Manuman.
Wow, that's very cool.
I know. Yeah, I just got to shout her up for that one.
Yeah, Leah Lim's excellent. A good friend of ours here on Native Roots Radio, and I've been on their show a few times. Her and her brother has a show too, on the radio on Ampers Network across Minnesota, I should say. So it's great, you know. I didn't really know that about Kate either, that she was from Minnesota. That was interesting to hear too.
Yeah, really cool how she was kind of telling, like, she does magazines and and journals and stuff, which I think is like when you talk about allies and wanting to learn more, and it's like, how can we, what kind of resources or what kind of knowledge can we offer? And I think that's going to be comfortable and welcoming and like easy to access, right? And I think magazines and little articles like that are a great way to get started, and also like listening to shows or radio shows like this, and also going to the panel things that they do host.
Oh no, go to these things. And you know what's really interesting too, Haley, I got to say this too, of course it's Native American or Heritage Month, but to me a lot of times a lot of stuff going on sometimes at the same time, and
right.
you know, not to mention our show. And it's just like, that's a really good problem to have.
Oh yeah. I know there's always good things going on, good people in the community hosting, good work. And yeah, it's exciting. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah. So, what else is going on here? I mean, let's talk a little bit, Ruth, they have that, tomorrow that exciting thing happening at a Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, turning those units into single people units. Now they have capacity to have 24 people staying there on an emergency basis. That's amazing. And that's doing work for the community that is just so valuable. And I know they've been around for 40 years. So if anyone out there, throw them $5 or something, you know, throw them some money at them. It's a really, really awesome organization.
Yeah, they have so many programs that help a number of our relatives, and especially our most vulnerable relatives who are unsheltered. And what a great, you know, I'm so happy they were able to get all this building permits approved and ready to go for housing before we get snow on the ground, really. That's huge. And I want to shout out miwrc.org. You can check that out. They do have a donation page as well as a list of their programming. But MIWRC will be having their fall feast on November 25th. It'll be from 5 to 9 p.m. And that address is 2300 15th Avenue South in Minneapolis. There's going to be a drum ceremony, a blessing of sacred items, a traditional feast, of course, and a giveaway. So it'll be fun.
Hey, I think I have our friend Heather Keeler on the line. Heather, are you there? Oh, just a second here. I got to switch you over. Sorry.
It's a little quiet.
Yeah, I picked the wrong button. Heather, can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, welcome. I see you're stuck in traffic. It's good to see you. We only got a few minutes left on the show, but thanks for stopping in.
Yeah, and also everybody be careful. I feel like with it being dark and just the weather and stuff too, travel safe while everybody's out here. I think updates are we're after the election, we're working on legislation. I think it's pretty clear in Minnesota that for us to get some things done in the House, we're going to have some bipartisan efforts. Things I've really worked on and things we've talked about are access to mental health, doing a psychiatric residential treatment facility on the west side of the state, but also, you know, protecting our water and doing the best that we can to shore up, you know, some of the Minnesota things that we can do in light of maybe what could come down from the federal government. And so we're kind of over the hump of being in our feelings about the election and kind of getting right into the work of things. So it's grueling, it's exciting, but we're back at it, that's for sure.
So you're in the St. Paul now, working at the Capitol, or are you?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So right now our big thing, yeah, that's where I was all day, trying to just work on getting our legislation, our draft legislation done. So we kind of are ready to go. The list of the committees came out, you know, with us being a tied house, it's interesting because we're going to have co-chairs of the committees. Oh. Not sure how that's going to look. But we'll have staff on both sides to help with that. And then, we got the list of committees. And so just the starting point of us really launching to kick off in January for session.
Wow. That's coming up quick. And I know I'll be down there talking to you about a few things too. And I suppose the sooner the better, correct?
Yeah. And really, you know, the landscape's different this year than it was last year. We are going to have some bipartisan sign on really before I'm sure any chairs hear any bills and committees in the House, which is a way for us to do good work together, but it's back on the community and organizers to do work on both sides of the aisle, which I think is probably good, and we can get some good stuff done. So,
well, it's always great to hear from you, Heather. We only have 30 seconds left, but I appreciate you stopping in. The Minnesota representative, Heather Keeler, thank you, a big peeny geeky, for stopping in and doing all the work you do for our community and our state.
Thanks. Stay safe.
All right, we'll see you. Hey, if you're listening to the show, you're part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground in which we stand on, it's sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
And free Leonard Peltier now.
Your new choice. Real News. Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
Kate Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Dr. Kristen Lierley, who will address all our health needs to make us more efficient TV watchers. Then Nightlight will really go up in smoke when I welcome Rose Bauman from Legacy Cigars.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. A Civic Media